So we're going to take a little bit of time tonight to remember Jay. I suspect that if I took a poll who remembers Jay, I'll get a lot of hands up. Jay was a pretty central member of this community and had been a longstanding member of the community going years back. I first met Jay in the late 80s as I was coming out of grad school. Jay was, if you looked between the two coasts, Wisconsin notwithstanding, with the exception of Utah, there really wasn't much going on in the field of systems except at Utah. And Jay's team really managed to establish a core set of technologies, and more importantly, a core set of amazing students graduated over a good 15 or 20 year period that really set Utah out. I met Jay early, as I mentioned, late in the 80s. Kind of Jay's classic way, that one of his first major community acts was to decide that we should get rid of the yearly Mocknicks proceedings, Mocknicks convention, because it was getting a little old in the tooth, and try to do something as audacious as challenge SOSP with a conference that was just as good but a little bit more practical. And as was often the case with a lot of Jay's ideas, people laughed at him and at the idea, but he was incredibly persistent. I think the origins of OSDI actually are a great example of what Jay was like. He was incredibly persistent in driving forward, let's make an OSDI. Now, he was willing to sacrifice Mocknicks that not a lot of people were too upset about, so it was a bit of a give for a big get. I remember myself, David Black, five or six others were on the first program committee for OSDI, and we just really didn't know what we were doing, but we were audacious enough to try to challenge SOSP. And I think over the last 15 years, this conference has really grown up to be exactly what Jay had envisioned way back then, clearly more so than anybody else who was on the program committee at that point had envisioned. So if for nothing else, you know, one of his greatest contributions to us in this field was the establishment of this conference, which is a fantastic thing. I'm not going to talk for very long. I'm going to hand things off to Eric and Robert, and they'll speak for a little bit. But I did want to mention really two things. First is, when I started in computer science, I think all the computer scientists were still alive. And over the last two decades, that has started to change. And occasionally it changes with the departure of somebody who has been as large as Jay and has touched as many people as Jay. And while it's very sad, obviously incredibly sad to see them go, it's nice that there's this community that can get together and remember them. And I think in the same way that we get together regularly and remember Mark Weiser, we'll have an opportunity to get together regularly and remember Jay. And I'm as happy as I could be about that. And I think Jay would be happy about that too. The second thing I want to mention is that the last time I saw Jay was in September at the last SOSP, and I think this was before he knew he was sick. I certainly did not know he was sick at the time. He looked great. He looked like he always looked great. Bubbly, excited. He wanted to talk a lot about Caroline. He wanted to talk about a lot about his family. Wasn't really that interested in talking about research that night, so we kind of chatted about what it was like. And I found this ironic at the time, what it was like to get a little bit older. And I don't know. I mean, I'd known Jay for a long time, but I never actually had the conversation with him, how old are you? And he told me he was 56, and I was blown away. I thought, couldn't be older than mid-40s. He and I are getting old at about the same rate. And I think one of the last things I said is I said, Jay, congratulations. You know, you've really gotten to a great place. And he said, thank you. So when I found out about 5 or 6 months later that Jay had died, that was, I'm sure like most of you, that was my oh shit moment. Oh shit. It's very sad. Tonight we're going to have a few people talk about some of the things they remember about Jay, a little bit of a memorial that we're going to put in place for him, some recognition remembering Jay. Mostly tonight, just think about Jay, drink some beers, think about Jay. If you come to the next OSDI, think about Jay. Eric.
Hi, my name is Eric Eiding, and I'm a longtime staff member in Jay's Flux Research Group. I started in the group in 1996, and I'm going to start things off by giving just a little summary of Jay's career, essentially, at the University of Utah. So, research professor Jay LaPro passed away on September 15th, 2008, due to complications of his battle with cancer. He was an enthusiastic and productive researcher, a dedicated mentor of students and staff, and an avid participant in activities such as camping and bicycle racing. His seemingly boundless energy was matched only by his kinetic personality, and thus he became well known by simply being unforgettable. His loss will be felt by all who knew him, both within the computer science community and elsewhere. Jay's career at the University of Utah spanned more than a quarter century. In 1980, he joined the Department of Computer Science as an undergraduate student and programmer. After earning his degree in 1983, Jay became the manager of the Systems Programming Group, and he quickly introduced Utah to Unix, and by 1987, he was the acting head of the department's computing facility. In the late 80s, he received funding from HP to port BSD Unix to HP workstations, leading to the first release of HP BSD 4.3 in 1988. Jay became the assistant director of the department's Center for Software Science, and where he and his staff continued to receive funding to work on system software, such as the GNU compiler tools and the mock operating system. The work quickly shifted from engineering to research, and in 1994, Jay received his first major ARPA contract to investigate fast and flexible mock-based systems. And also in 1994, as just mentioned, Jay served as the program chair for the first ever OSDI symposium, which he conceived and founded, and which has since become one of the premier venues for systems research. Jay led his staff and students through several successful OS research projects, including the first, including the Fluke microkernel, which was published in OSDI 96 and 99, the FLAS security architecture, which was in USENIX Security 99, the OS kit, SOSP 97, Java-based operating systems, which appeared here and in USENIX, and many others that I don't need to mention. In the late 90s, Jay's research group developed a network testbed that they used internally to support all of that systems research. They quickly assembled a version of that testbed to be used by researchers anywhere, and in 2000, they made their facility available to the world. This testbed, called Emulab, made it possible for people to configure sizable networks of real machines in just a handful of minutes, thereby changing the standards of experimentation in the systems research community. Today, the Emulab testbed site at Utah has thousands of users around the world and hosts many thousands of individual experiments every year. More than 250 papers since Emulab was started operation describe research that was validated on Emulab-based testbeds. The Emulab testbed was the basis of Jay's research for the past several years, resulting in many publications, and Jay never tired of spreading the word about Emulab and what it could do. Through ongoing and new activities, his Flux research group will be continuing Jay's vision into the future. And a final note, in addition to being a passionate computer scientist, he was also passionate about Utah and its unspoiled natural landscapes. If you're interested in making a memorial contribution in Jay's memory, his family asked that you send a donation to the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, which you can find at suwa.org. Thanks.
I'm Robert G., another longtime staff member at Utah, not quite as long as Eric, but I just wanted to tell you about one of the ways that the University of Utah is honoring Jay and continuing his legacy. We are working on creating the Jay LaPro Professorship in Computer Science in the School of Computing at Utah, which will have an endowment attached to it. We're working on creating this right now. It should be announced formally soon, and this will be a tenure track or a tenured position. It will, obviously include a chance to work closely with the research group that Jay founded that did a lot of work that Eric described. So if you have any questions or anything about that, you can ask me, you can ask Eric, or it should soon be formally published on the Utah CS website.
So one of the things we'd like to do now is open it up to some people who got to know and work closely with Jay over the years and give them an opportunity to just say a few words about some of their interactions with Jay. So I'd like to invite those who've indicated interest in saying a few words, or if you haven't but you'd like to, up to the stage and tell us a little bit about your time with Jay.
So I'm Greg Minchell, and I met Jay somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago. I guess I'd probably met him earlier, but my time that I started spending a lot of time with him, I was working for Novell, which was an Utah corporation, so I was spending time commuting to Utah and living there. Or not living there, but visiting there. And for some reason, Peter Honeyman showed up and dragged me over to see a former co-worker of his, Doug Orr, and then the three of us went over to spend time with Jay. And since then, and so it was good for me, it was sort of a nice cultural break. Jay was in Salt Lake, Novell was a little bit south of Salt Lake, and so I could stop off and spend time with him. The thing that I would say out of my friendship, so I'm not sure what the pronunciation. I'm not a hagiographer. I don't, talk about saints very well. And so it's probably very hard for me, and this may be to some extent the influence of Honeyman in me, it's hard for me to say positive things in succession about somebody. So you have to forgive me for some negative comments here. But I would say that one of the things that in my years of friendship with Jay, one of the things that frustrated me the most was running into him at a conference. Because at a conference, Brian was very fortunate, I would say. But at a conference, it was hard to get more than three or four words out of Jay that didn't have anything to do with either technology or funding issues and stuff like that. And I would say the other thing that annoyed me greatly about Jay was his sort of desire to promote this thing called OSDI, which I was dead against. It seemed like a really bad idea. We had a very good community. We met every couple of years. There were probably only about 10 or 12 really good computer operating system papers that would appear in 2 years. And so why would you want to do something like this? And I find it even more annoying that it's been a very successful conference, and what a good conference it is. I will mention a couple of other things. As is sort of clear from the things that both his coworkers and Brian said before, Jay was very passionate, very committed to computer science and to his work and to the projects he wanted to complete. The type of cancer that he had, he actually probably should have lived. The hope was that he would live maybe 5 or 6 years. And he went into the hospital, I guess, the last time, and at least at first, the idea was that he was kind of back in, things had gone kind of bad, but he would get out and be able to, sort of be out of the hospital and hopefully live this, abbreviated life that was going on. And so Caroline asked him, well, okay, so when you're out of the hospital, what do you think? Do you want to sort of retire from the university and we can spend some time? And Jay kind of scratched his head and 5 or 6 years? Yeah, maybe in about 3 years. I got some stuff I got to do. I'm going to go back to work. But then, maybe in about 3 years and stuff like that. And so that shows the passion that he had for the science. And, and I think, then as people have said, and I apologize, I don't have any notes. But the other thing about Jay that one of the previous speakers, a couple of people have said, is his love for wilderness. And in Utah, and that's basically why he lived in Utah, I think. So he worked really hard, and I would say, overworked. He was definitely a workaholic, but he also spent a lot of time, going out into the wilderness and doing a lot of good stuff. And he was a great guy in many ways. He wasn't perfect, and therefore he was human, and which is a sort of a nice thing to have in somebody that you're thinking about. And I'll miss him. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Stefan Savage. I knew Jay for about 15 years, I guess before I started graduate school. And in a fairly twisted way that Jay found very funny, he ended up being the cause for me meeting my wife, which is not the story I'll tell now because I don't have enough beer in me. But there were a couple of things I wanted to mention about Jay that haven't been brought out. I mean, there's some obvious ones about OSDI, and I think a couple of people have alluded to him talking about funding and so forth. And so actually one aspect of that I'd like to mention is Jay was amazing at the number of different things he had his fingers into and how he could pull them off, and yet at the same time was so tremendously disorganized that it was like watching a drunk juggler on stage who somehow manages to keep all the balls in the air. And looking around this room now, I know that there are at least several dozen people who, as I did, would receive email from Jay of the form, there's a grant proposal I'm submitting tomorrow, and I need a letter of support from you, or I'm going in 50% from you, can you submit your budget statement? And that was business as usual, and yet he would still pull it off. And he made that entire operation go virtually single-handedly. The thing that I really though wanted to talk about was not kind of the loss to the research community or to people like me, but the impact that Jay had on graduate students, I think, is not really appreciated by the faculty in the audience who didn't get to know him as a graduate student. And so the reason is, if you're a graduate student here now, it's somewhat daunting to go up to a famous professor, up to Franz Kaschuk or Brian Burchett, and say, hey, I'm Joe from University of such and such, and I really love your work. And so it can be hard to become a part of all of this. Jay, on the other hand, was not only approachable, he would happily go and treat you just the way he would treat the most famous professor around. He would go and sit you down, he'd have a beer, and he would call a spade, and he'd say, I think that paper's crap. And he put you at ease, and he would introduce you around. And once you had met him, he would always recognize you. He was never one of those people who tried to get rid of you. He was someone who, you were now part of the circle of Jay. And there was a huge amount of networking that happened for young graduate students through him, because I'm really hard-pressed to think of anyone who fills that place of connecting. He would connect anyone and was happy to do it on equal terms. And so for those of you who didn't get a chance, I think, you know, that's really too bad. And for those of us who did, I think it was our privilege.
So, unfortunately, I'm not nearly as good as Jay was at finding appropriate words at appropriate times at the very last minute. So I'll try to keep it short. One of Jay's great talents was definitely finding people and introducing them into the research community and exciting and, you know, getting infecting other people with his excitement for research and systems programming and stuff like you know, the whole field. I was one of the ones he did this to, and I can't say how grateful I am for that and for the time I got to spend with him. Just some background, I was actually an undergrad at the University of Utah. Jay basically found me there, and I started my research career in his Flux group during the Mach period and Flux and Fluke systems. I was only one of the people he found both locally and elsewhere, and sort of infected with imparted his wonderful energy and spirit and you know, desire to do systems research and make things go do all the things he did. So, in fact, just today I had the great pleasure of even meeting one of the latest undergrads from his group who I hadn't known before, and so the cycle continues even to the very end, and even certainly I will be missing him very dearly. I'm sort of experiencing for the first time something I've only read in books before, namely that feeling where you would see somebody from behind, and I go, "Oh, there's Jay. Oh, wait a minute." And that's happened several times already just today. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say. There's so much more that could be said, but I'll leave that to other people. Thank you.
I just wanted to tell a story that I think, for me, it really illustrates Jay's personality. So he and I went one winter to visit Wisconsin, and it was sort of just as it was starting to get warmed up a little bit. So in Wisconsin, that's like June or something. But the lakes were still frozen, and so we went out. You know, at some point we had a break. We went out on a walk on one of the lakes. And as we started to get out a little bit farther, you started to see kind of some signs that maybe the ice farther out was cracking a little bit. And so I was kind of, okay, whoa, we should probably go back to the shore. And Jay just got like this impish look on his face and starts, you know, stomping out farther onto the ice to see kind of if, you know, if it really is breaking up. And I, you know, to me, you know, the one of the reasons why Jay was such a good researcher was just that he was always, you know, testing limits. And, you know, testing limits of, you know, how long after the paper submission deadline do they actually leave the, you know, the submission system up, right? Submit every couple minutes until it finally doesn't work anymore. Or, you know, how long can I neglect my NSF annual reports before they start freezing my funding? Or, you know, how long will the plane wait for me? You know, I actually had, you know, Jay once tell me, you know, "Oh, you know, I have a ticket for a plane that leaves in an hour, and I haven't decided if I'm going on this trip yet." So, you know, we at Utah miss him a lot, and he's built a group with that has a lot of people in it who are very loyal to him because he was loyal to us, and yeah, we miss him a lot.
I'm Eddie Kohler from UCLA, and I didn't actually know Jay very closely, but I wanted to tell people who might not have known him at all. One of the things that was special about him for me was that when you talked to him, you felt like he was all there just for you. For however long it was, for 5 minutes or for 10 minutes, he would give you everything that he thought, and it was always clear that what he was giving you was coming from a pure soul and a really good man. And I wish that I could meet up to that. So.
So I, too, was one of those graduate students that, you know, Jay cornered when I was just dumb and didn't know anyone or anything. And I'll always be grateful for what Stefan described as, you know, treating everybody the same. So what I wanted to do is perhaps challenge those of you in the audience, those who knew Jay, and maybe even those who didn't, and those of us who, you know, now need glasses to read the print because we're getting on in age. We got 113 students here on scholarships. So make it a point. Reach out to them. And let's honor Jay by doing to our current students what Jay did for all of us.
So Robert and Rich are going to announce the winners of the Jay LaPro Award for Best Paper. Now, there's a little bit of a backstory on this. Are you going to tell the backstory?
You can tell.
Jay hated Best Paper Awards. And so there was a long discussion going on with Allie and me and Robert and Rich and a few other folks as to what would be the best thing to do for Jay. And we kind of decided that given how much he hated them, that we should memorialize him in a Best Paper Award, given every OSDI, give us a chance to think about him and him a chance to think about us. So with that.
All right, thanks, Brian. So we're going to hand out the Jay LaPro Best Paper Awards now. And before we get into doing them, I wanted to say just a little bit about how the program committee chose these papers. So we tried to do this fairly democratically. This was not, you know, Robert and I sitting in a back room and picking the papers. So we had the program committee nominate a set of papers and then vote upon them with everybody having an equal vote. And we used Hot Crap to help manage this process to, you know, avoid, as you've heard us extolling the virtues of Hot Crap this morning, we used Hot Crap to help manage this and you know, avoid PC members being influenced by any conflicts that they had. So, you know, the PC members weren't aware if papers in which they were conflicted were nominated. They weren't able to, of course, vote for papers in which they were conflicted. They still don't know, exactly. They still wouldn't know if something on paper in which they were conflicted was nominated, unless it won, of course. And we used, technically, we used a voting method called approval voting, which meant you could sort of vote for multiple papers, any papers that you thought met the bar for a Best Paper Award. And then when we did all that, we kind of added up the votes. We normalized the votes, you know, based on how many conflicts each different paper had. But in the end, none of that made a difference. In the end, there were really three papers that stood out in the program. And so it was pretty obvious which papers deserved the award. So we're going to hand out now announce the winners of the first. We're going to do this, by the way, in chronological order. So as you know, there's one paper presented today, one tomorrow, one on Wednesday. So we're going to do them in that order. And then as we do this, I'd like the authors to come up. And then we have certificates that we're going to hand out to each author. And there's a check, only one check. So they'll have to figure out how to divide that up. That's not up to us. And then we'll, after we get the authors for each paper up here, we'll thank them all together. And then we'll go on to the next paper. So the first paper is the Dryad Link paper we heard this morning. And so that's UNU, Michael Izzard, Dennis Federley, Mihai Buju, Ulfar Elrickson, Pradeep Kumargunda, and John Curry. So if you guys could come on up. Thank you all. The check was in that first one, so I didn't forget it. And this brings us to Tuesday's paper, which is Klee. Actually, there's some question about how to pronounce this, your system, so correct me if I'm wrong. But the Klee paper from Stanford, Christian Kadar, Daniel Dunbar, and Dawson Engler, please come on up. Congratulations, guys. Is it Klee?
Thank you.
It's made up to me, right?
I don't know. Well, congratulations. All right. Congratulations.
All right. And then the third paper being presented on Wednesday, Difference Engine from San Diego. So we have Diwikar Gupta, Sangmin Lee, Michael Vrabel, Stefan Savage, Alex Snorin, George Varghese, Jeff Folker, and Amin Vedat. Please come on up. All right, so I just want to remind people a few things regarding the reception. So the buses are going to be leaving at 6:30, so fairly soon now. You're going to need to have the ticket that you got when you registered. And then if you're not planning to attend, please give that ticket back to the USENIX staff at the registration desk. If you're planning to drink, and there is, I should say that I believe there is going to be an open bar, you'd want to bring your ID. And then there'll be buses back starting at 8:00. But you can stay later.